Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Is Trump's plan to end the Ukraine conflict a dead letter on arrival? A ceasefire is not peace. Freezing the conflict does not address security issues. Washington provoked this conflict. This is why Trump's attempts to mediate is doomed to fail. Crosstalking Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, Daniel McAdams in Lake Jackson. He is the executive director of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. In Paris, we have Hal Gardner. He is a professor in the Department of History and Politics at the American University of Paris. And in Lisbon, we cross to Alexander Guerrero. He is an international legal analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Daniel, the title of this program is called Final Offer. At least that's how it's being spun by the Trump people trying to end Biden's war, as the president tells us here. I'm very unimpressed, I must say. Agreeing that Crimea is sovereign Russia, well, Russia doesn't care if the United States recognizes it or not, one way or another. It's been that case since 2014. Also talking about creating a ceasefire, and that is also a dead letter because that doesn't bring peace. It won't resolve anything. Daniel.
Yeah, well, it's insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results, and that would be the definition of the administration. The problem is they're proceeding from a set of false assumptions about the war in between Russia and Ukraine, and I use that term very carefully because they've proceeded from a false set of assumptions, and so how can you proceed to resolve the problem if you don't understand the problem? You know, Trump keeps sending Witkoff back to Putin with the Kellogg plan over and over again. And Putin says, no, I don't want the Kellogg plan. We can't accept it. And he sends him back with the same plan again. So that's no way to conduct things. It's unbelievable how much energy the Trump administration has expended on this problem and continues to expend. And now we have a situation, we have Rubio, we have J.D. Vance, we have Trump himself saying, listen, guys, if you don't knock it off and sit down and agree to our plan, we're going to walk away. And both sides say, okay. And they keep sending Witkoff back. So it's an absolute farce. It's a charade.
Yeah, Alex, let's go to Paris. Hall, one of the things that comes to mind watching this entire charade is that maybe Trump's plan is for it to fail, is to have the Russians and the Ukrainians, their vassal state, to say no. I mean, is that a possibility? Is that part of the gambit? Because Trump wants to, quote unquote, walk away. Hall.
Well, I hope the hell that that's not the case. I really believe Trump when he came to office saying he was going to make peace, even though in his first term he made no effort at all to enforce the Normandy agreements, to do anything. He actually boosted U.S. support for Ukraine during his first term. Not only that, Zelensky has just shown where Trump supported that they would never accept a Russian control over Ukraine. America said that under Trump, and now Zelensky's throwing that back into Trump's face. So this is a really important. There's not going to be any step if Zelensky continues to say he will never accept the Russian control over Crimea. That's the first step. But then a ceasefire, as you said, is not sufficient. Peace will only come about if we have a sustainable peace in which there's an agreed new security order in Europe. And that was talked about by Medvedev in 2008. And that's where the talk should have begun then, before the United States said they were going to expand NATO to Ukraine sometime in the future. And they've never even been honest about that. What a lie. United States literally lied about that. Sorry.
Alexander, it's really quite remarkable. It's tragic because so many people have died. All of us on this program, you've been on here many, many times, and we've talked about Ukraine. And all of us come to the same conclusion, a new security arrangement for Europe. Oh, and guess what, Alexander? On December 15th, 2021, that's exactly what Russia sent to NATO and the United States. I mean, all of the destruction and death that has happened as a result of this. And the Russians haven't changed their position whatsoever. And even the Trump administration won't address them. I mean, what is Witkoff talking about when he comes to Moscow? Go ahead, Alexander.
Well, on this specific case, I believe that at least we all always knew about which were the cards that Russia had on their hands since 2021 or 2014. At least that's a clear game that Russia is playing presently with the international community. So they never, the Moscow never hid their real intentions, their real fears, and what they wanted to be fixed. It's nothing to do exactly with Ukraine. It's a matter of security and survival of Russia itself, but not only of Russia, but also with the international community, as we all know. Because if we have specific tensions towards one major power like Russia is, then I believe that we'll have a real global power problem around the world, because we'll have only one power dominating, all others trying to play and or to submit to the will of this only power, and we are not going to have a balanced world order, meaning that in the end what we have is a specific problem because Ukraine is trying to show and to demonstrate that they have a strong position, and the European Union is now trying as well to play and to demonstrate to everyone everything, all the power that they never had, but that they want people to believe that they have. In the end, they always depend on the European Union. They always relied on the United States. And presently, what we have is European Union on a crossroads. They really need to choose if they want to submit to the Ukrainian will and play this war game, or if they want to accept Trump's plan and finally get some peace and bring some peace to the continent, because Europe presently is not in the position to play and to put even more intention to all this conflict. Europe needs first to get prosperity back to its continent. Its major powers like Germany and France, they all need to start thinking about their own people, instead of keep flowing a lot of money and weapons to Ukraine, because Europe cannot survive a war in case of need.
Well Alexander, you could flip it on its head, and I'll throw this to Daniel, is that, you know, the making Russia the eternal enemy works to the European Union's advantage, because it's a unifying element, okay? We have to prepare for war. I was reading that this afternoon. You know, we have to prepare for war in the next 3 years, okay? That means huge deficit spending, money they don't have, but what it does is it keeps them in charge, because they need an enemy. And this is really quite dangerous for the entire continent. The Europeans, they could have played a pivotal role in the beginning of all of this. The Biden administration was driving it, but the Germans and the French and the British could have said, no, not on our continent here. But no, they abdicated their responsibility. Daniel.
Well, it's what happens when you're led by failed, unelected politicians, which is what's happened to Europe. I mean, there was a time when the best and brightest had risen to the top in Europe. People like De Gaulle and Mitterrand in France. And you know, you're now led by people like Kaya Kallas and von der Leyen, you know, people who have no understanding of the world. What's happening with Europe, which is fascinating, is that not only is Europe becoming an adversary of Russia, but Europe now is an adversary of the United States in this process. Because Trump says, listen, Zelensky, you got to sit down and start listening and start accepting some of these deals. Zelensky runs to London or Paris and they say, oh, don't worry, we'll take care of you. We're going to up the spending. We're going to up the weapons. We're going to keep this war going. Europe has literally become an adversary to the United States in this process. And, you know, the sooner the administration understands this, the better off they'll be.
Exactly. You know, Hal, one of the things that this program has discussed over the last few months is that the inability of the West to conduct diplomacy, it always has to be zero sum. The United States has forgotten what diplomacy is all about. We see it all over the place with Iran, what we see, what's going on with the genocide in Gaza, and the inability. There are diplomatic tools to end the conflict in Ukraine. It's not that hard. Go ahead, Hal.
Yeah, this is one of the great irons. The first problem is the NATO and EU double enlargement was never coordinated either among the U.S. or Europeans or with Russia particularly. So that's part of the issue right there. And both of them were expanding into a region that they had no historical understanding of. So second point is that the democratic liberal ideology, the end of history ideology, blinded us. We had this idea that the world was going to democratize without setting the geopolitical security requirements before we could reform countries. In other words, we are insisting we'll make a deal with you only when Russia democratizes, only when China democratizes. That's absurd. States have to deal with the situation as it is and work out their differences step by step. It takes time. So the whole approach of NATO enlargement and assuming that Russia was somehow going to democratize just has flown back in the faces of the United States and those neoliberals and neoconservatives who pushed for this enlargement. The people who really, the cold warriors like Paul Nitze and George Kennan, they were against NATO enlargement precisely because they knew how diplomacy worked. They had worked on it in the Cold War. I mean, the Cold War wasn't great. It created a trillion-dollar arms industry, but at least we didn't have World War III. We are closer to World War III now than we ever were during the Cold War, and even maybe even closer than the Cuban Missile Crisis, but that can be debated.
Yeah, with people with a much smaller IQ in charge. You know, it's absolutely true. I mean, you know, what was it? You hire clowns, you just get a circus, okay? Alexander, the Europeans, they're doing everything they can to continue this war. What do they get out of it?
I don't think there's actually a way to get out of it unless they accept Trump's plans, which means, although we don't know exactly on what kind of plans or details it consists, at least there's an intention to bring both parties to the table and at least try to find one or two points in common from where we can start discussing a future peace plan. This is really a real attempt to bring democracy and diplomacy. If we don't go and if we don't abide with this plan, if we don't want the parties to sit on the table and to reach at least some kind of understanding, our only way and our only solution in the future will be to go to war against Russia or against
Canada. All right, I got to jump in here, gentlemen. I have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. I remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Daniel in Lake Jackson. Considering the amount of hours that all of you have spent on this program over the years, particularly during the course of this conflict here, it's very clear what Russia expects, how Russia expects this conflict to end. Well, Donald Trump is not presenting that here. Donald Trump is threatening to throw in the towel, as it were. Daniel, is that credible? And if he did, what would it look like?
I mean, if only he would. I mean,
yeah.
He got it for a few minutes when he said, this is Biden's war. He could have come into office and said, look, this is Biden's war. I want nothing to do with it. I was elected on a plan to end wars. The best way to end it is to walk away. That's what you have to do. But the neocons, A, they won't let him, and B, the information that he's getting stovepiped up to him is incorrect information. And we know that's been the case all along. Russia's about to lose. Russia's economy is in tatters. Well, you know, we're about to lose. Oh, it's a stalemate. All of these things are false information that are being fed to him, and so his decisions are based on false information. The reality is something very radically different. We actually republished an article this week by Brian Berletic, who made an excellent point, which is the fundamental point that is not understood, which is that the United States is acting as a mediator in this conflict,
yep.
Whereas in reality, it is a negotiator, because it is a war between the United States and Russia.
Exactly.
So you can't continue with this charade that the U.S. is going to be an honest broker and an honest mediator. If anything, we've known from the New York Times piece, which was not a surprise to any of the four of us here, and pieces that have been going, you know, been published all along, this is the United States proxy war against Russia. Ukraine is a minor player in this farce.
And all the more so, Hall, is that the problem that the Europeans and the Americans, particularly the Trump administration here, is that they're not focused on peace. And they're focused on all these other kind of, what they're focused on is how can we have a strategic defeat for Russia? That's what their goal is. And that's what they're working towards. And that's why they're so frustrated, because they're not achieving it. But none of them are interested in peace. And as all of us know, it has nothing to do with Ukraine. Go ahead, Hall.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I would say step back a bit. I still think the threat to move pull away from the talks is in part aimed at getting Ukraine on board.
What do you mean get Ukraine on board? Where do they get a vote in this? A vote? They don't. No, you know, I really want to make it clear to everybody. Ukraine is not a victim here. It volunteered. It volunteered for this duty. So they don't get a vote. Keep going.
Well, the point is that right now Ukraine will not accept Russian control of Crimea. As long as that's
So what? They've had control of it since 2014.
Right, but the war will just continue. That's what I'm trying to say. Trump is going to focus on China. He doesn't care about what's going on. This is where I disagree with the previous comment. Trump is more focused on China, and he wants the Europeans to take over. So if the Europeans take over, that means more war. There will be no peace agreement because they're not talking peace, as you said.
Do you really think that the Europeans are going to? I think it's a huge bluff. I really believe it. I don't think they have the resolve. Their electorates are not going to support this. We see this, well the rise of the populist parties. They're all against this here. Okay, or they cancel an election like they did in Romania. I see it more as a bluff. I'm sorry to keep going.
Well, no, it's okay. I accept that point of view because there's significant dissent against a continual support for Ukraine here in Europe. I see it in France all the time. But the French are using it to build up their nuclear capabilities. They want to create a nuclear defense over all of Europe. The Germans are for the first time talking about massive military support for Ukraine. The Swedes are doing the same, and you see the Baltic states also. Talking in military terms. So the talk among the leadership is real. And in my view, if Trump pulls out, and as you said, he's kind of caught between wanting to negotiate, or what I call Trump a schizoid between being a militarist and an appeaser. He can't figure out where he is. And so if he pulls out entirely, we won't even have an appeaser on our in charge. So the Europeans will find themselves confronted with their contradictions and where they'll have to decide whether how much to support Ukraine or not. And I don't see any real peace talks coming, any real negotiation for peace at the moment.
Alexander, is Russia a threat to Europe?
Absolutely not. Not only to Europe, but it's also not a threat to anyone in the world, because what Russia only wants is to protect itself. Its survival, its existence, its continuation. And what we have witnessed until now is only answers from the Russian side after any other threats attempt to attack Russia. And I mean the European Union, I mean NATO. So usually it's Russia's answer to any kind of provocations coming from the West or from anywhere in the world. I don't see any kind of intention from the Russian side to be a threat. And let me clarify this, Peter. It's that it frightens me more and more to hear many European Union politicians trying to brainwash the electors in order to say that Russia has no power, that Russia is bluffing, that Russia is presently no military power, in order to make people accept that we really need to go to war to Russia. And we hear it often, more and more here in Europe, that there are a lot of people, vox pop, saying that we really need to go to war to defeat Russia. And this concerns me, because people here have no idea what this will mean for the European Union itself, for the world as a whole. This is a matter of concern. People have no idea. It's not debatable here. For example, the legitimacy that Russia has over Crimea, over Donbass, over all the regions. On my opinion, it's not debatable, and it's totally clear that Russia has sovereignty over all these lands. However, here, people don't even dare to discuss. They just say things on a very harsh way, because the only speech here is we need to defeat Russia. But why do we need to defeat someone that never posed a threat to us? Russia never threatened to attack us. Russia has no imperialistic ambitions to progress and to dominate the European continent. So what we hear is exactly the opposite. Is these neocons and all these globalists here now ruling over the European Union demonstrating and attempting to create more pressure and more tension and trying to reach the heart of the power of Russia in order to change an entire society.
Yeah, well, you know, but what they're doing is destroying themselves in the process, okay? That's one of the great ironies of all of this, when you look at the sanctions and all this. And no European country is going to put this to a vote, that's for sure. Daniel, you know, one of the, you know, very broadly, one of the things for maybe think tankers and some politicians, commentators, is that the outcome of this conflict is going to reverse the outcome of the Cold War. Russia was, quote unquote, defeated in the Cold War. That's not the narrative here, and we can have a separate program on that. But that is a reversal of the common opinion that the Soviets slash the Russians lost the Cold War. They're not supposed to succeed. Daniel.
Well, the one thing that's missed in this whole discussion, not just here, but in the broader discussion between the U.S., the Europeans, and the Russians and Ukrainians is that Russia is winning this war. And you just said it yourself, Peter. That's one thing that never, it's like the elephant in the room that no one's allowed to talk to. We're talking about Crimea. We should be talking about Odessa. We should be talking about Transnistria. You know, I mean, as who was it? As Arestovich said this week, he said, why should we accept giving up these four territories now? Because in 6 months, it'll be six territories. And if we wait a year, it'll be eight territories. He's a very unique person with interesting insights. That's the bottom line. Russia is winning this war, but the rest of the world acts as if it's a stalemate. It's a draw. So Ukraine gets to decide, oh, we won't accept this. You're getting wiped out on the battlefield. You don't get to make those decisions, you know? I mean, we didn't ask Hitler, would you accept half of Europe after World War II if he had survived? It just, war doesn't work this way.
That's right. You know, Hall, one of the things that has been so frustrating for me is that geopolitics is suspended in midair so often of the to end a conflict, you need a peace, and then the conflict ends. You don't have a ceasefire and then a peace. You have a peace first. That's how you do it. Historically, that's how it works. Go ahead, Hall.
Well, this is the question. You know, to what extent? I mean, if Ukraine and the Europeans take over and Trump dumps the whole thing and pulls back, will they stop and really work for peace? It's not the way I see the Europeans talking right now. That's where I was agreeing. The neocons in Europe, look at Macron. He switched from being talking to Putin, supposedly, to now boosting up French and European military capabilities. And what worries me is that there won't be a peace, that there will be seizure of Odessa. Now, is it in the Russian interest to really expand beyond where it is? I don't really think it is. And so, therefore, you need both sides to be able to hit each other enough until they realize that they can't go any farther. But if the Ukrainians don't start realizing that they have lost the war, as I was trying to say earlier, then they will continue this war, and we're going to see more people dead and more carnage. I really think that's why I was trying to say Trump has to stay in the, even if he's not entirely in the middle mediating, he still has to keep the ball rolling.
Well,
so
yeah,
but
Hall, and we're rapidly running out of time. Alexander, Hall brings up a really good point. You know, Trump is damned if he does, damned if he doesn't, because if he stays in, the war continues, meaning he broke his campaign promise. I can end this conflict in 24 hours. I mean, and that's why he said on Air Force One, this is Biden's war, this is Biden's war. No, Mr. Trump, it's your war now. Yeah. Go ahead, right. Alexander.
Yes. He inherited that war. So if presently he's still providing support to the Ukrainian war effort, actually this is also his war. And he needs to do one simple thing, which is cut the support, military support to Ukraine, force Zelensky, or at least somebody who will come after him, to celebrate any kind of peace deal with Russia. I mean, take the opportunity to celebrate considering the actual situation now in the battlefield, because if you wait more months, the situation will get even worse, or even for Zelensky himself. He even can get killed. He should be toppled. I mean, look at Trump's efforts in order to try to bring a replacement for Zelensky. So basically, this is a strategy that needs to be done. And also,
okay, all right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. Fascinating discussion. We didn't solve the problem. We're going to keep working on it. In the meantime, I want to thank my guests in Paris, Lake Jackson, and in Lisbon. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Rostock rules.